Alrighty.
Okay. So I guess we'll take about 45 minutes and then leave some time for questions at the end. So I'll try to skip over some of the parts that that might not be as interesting and let you folks ask the questions at the times where you'd like to find a little bit more out on that particular area and dive in deeper. I guess I should just ask, though, how many people in the small group here have actually heard or used EJB3 already?
I've tried it. I didn't actually use it in a project, but I've been, playing around with it.
Okay. So you're somewhat aware of the technology then already?
Yeah.
Okay. So hopefully some of this will be review then to you, but if you, again, want to sort of dig deeper in any particular area, then feel free.
Yeah, I'm only aware of it from reading. We haven't even.
Okay.
We live on ADFBC.
Okay. So it's kind of a simple architecture diagram where you have the different layers in the different places, and EJB3 is meant to sort of fit at the business logic layer in the sense of session beans and message-driven beans and that sort of thing.
I'm getting the top part of that slide cut off. Is anybody else seeing that?
Is there a title on that slide, Mike?
There should be a title.
It says business logic and persistence.
Oh, yeah, we're not seeing that. What is
I can see it.
Oh, really?
I see it.
I pinned the console. That's the only thing I know that usually causes that thing to be cut off. So there's one person that doesn't see it and two people that do? Is that
two and two.
Two and two. I don't know what I can do about that.
Can you just scroll the slide down a little bit?
Scroll the slide down.
There it goes.
There we go. So we don't see the red bar at the bottom, so at least we can see the title.
Is that better? Okay. Okay, so let's skip on past here. The idea here is that EJB3 is essentially a simplification. It standardizes persistence as well. So we saw in that last slide that EJB3 was broken into the business logic and the persistence logic because there are actually two main components to the spec now and that have been somewhat split apart, being the business logic and EJB standard EJB3 components, and then the persistence now in the form of the Java Persistence API. And Oracle, we've been actually becoming quite active in the platform spec. I sit on the platform expert group right now, and I also am the co-specification lead for EJB3. So Oracle...
Can I ask a question about simplifying development? Because
sure.
Do you think it'll simplify development with TopLink and Hibernate, or simplify development with instead of using the old EJB specification?
So simplification was in two areas. Simplification primarily is in the session bean layer.
Yeah.
It'll make using session beans, message-driven beans, much easier in terms of configuration and definition. The simplification wasn't done so much on the entity beans. Instead, an entirely new persistence API was added.
Okay, so the simplifying stuff is in the session beans, and then the standardization is for the persistence.
That's right.
The
simplification happens on the session bean side within this existing standard. So it's what we call a simplified API that allows annotations and other things to be used. The Java Persistence API is yet another API that mimics the existing Hibernate and TopLink and other POJO-based persistence APIs.
Yeah. And they were already, not as complex as the spec, so...
Yeah, exactly. They were much simpler, but they were also kind of a lightweight persistence API, essentially, not necessarily running within a container. So that's kind of what's been standardized.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
One of the focuses that we've had within the application server is to make sure that migration is something that people can do, because with all the simplification that's happened, as we've done quite a lot of tweaking to the spec now in EJB3, the next concern that people have raised is, okay, then how can I get there if there's been so many changes? So we've tried to actually focus a lot of our development effort on having a good migration story, and we think that that will help people be able to move up from either an Oracle application server application or an application on any server. You know, because if we have a good migration story, people will even be able to migrate existing applications on other servers. So one of the GB3 goals was to simplify developers' lives that now have to use EJB. And the POJO kind of boom is kind of one way to do that. You can define session beans as POJOs without having to extend, you know, specific interfaces or anything like that, or implement specific interfaces, and that the interfaces themselves don't have to extend specific EJB interfaces. In addition, the standardization of the persistence API was kind of another main thrust. And again, as I say, that was based on the ORM that was already out there. And Toplink has been one of the main contributing factors to this API. So we have these two things now. We have the core container with the session beans and message-driven beans, and we have the Java Persistence API. And the intent is that in the next iteration of the platform spec, that the Persistence API will be split off from the EJB spec.
Is it going to be merged with the JDO specification?
Well, in a sense, that's already happened. The JDO people joined the JSR 220 expert group, and once they kind of came on board with us, we kind of used them and integrated some of their experience and knowledge and practices and APIs to some extent with ours. And so
but
now
there's still two specifications, right?
There's still two specifications. According to Sun, the JDO 2.0 is going to be kind of reverting to maintenance mode after this.
Okay.
So it's essentially, I think, going to go into kind of open source land, I guess, with the JPOX implementation.
Yeah. Okay.
So I've talked about this. I sit as a co-spec lead. We have lots of other involvement as well. We have the Toplink Essentials, which is an open source community version of Toplink that we've contributed to the Java EE Glassfish platform reference implementation that Sun is putting together. So Toplink Essentials is being the reference implementation for the Java Persistence API on the Sun site.
Is Oracle still maintaining that code base, or are you developing a separate code base for Toplink?
So what's happening is it's derived from Toplink, but there's still some extra value add that regular Toplink is going to add on top. And regular Toplink is going to, you know, have things like cache coordination, a lot of the special Oracle support for the Oracle database that we would add on. And Toplink Essentials is going to be kind of a trimmed down community version of it that will give all the main features. The source compatibility should be fairly transparent. In other words, all you need to do is change the import statements to be able to get the same. So in other words, there may be different code streams, but they're fully compatible.
But what if something is changed in the open source version, then is the Toplink version gonna follow that, or is it, you know, because if one is managed by the open source community and the other one by Oracle, how is it gonna be synchronized?
Well, so I mean, we're still obviously kind of very much in the driver's seat with respect to the open source. Just like any open source project, there's always some people that kind of accept changes, and
yeah.
So all those changes are gonna go through us, so we'll know about them.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
But you're still gonna be like the primary lead for that code base.
Sure, sure. I mean,
okay.
We know the code base the best right now, and until we get more people on board, we certainly, you know, we're the ones. It makes sense for us to be kind of driving it.
Sure.
Until people kind of get up to speed in other areas.
Yeah.
We're also leading an Eclipse project for EJB3 persistence support. So for the Java Persistence API, to support the reference implementation with inside Eclipse, we're doing a project called DALI, which other people have joined on to, the JBoss guys and BEAs on that, and some of the other smaller ones as well. So that's going ahead, and we're talking about that in some of the upcoming at EclipseCon. We'll be talking about that as well.
Okay. So and do you know when it's going to be ready?
It won't be ready until the spec is final.
And so that's going to. Do you have any idea when the spec is going to be final?
Yeah, we're basically frozen now. The spec, the EJB3 spec ships as part of the Java EE5 specification.
Yeah.
And that spec will be released by Java 1.
Okay.
So that's going to be, you know, I think when you can start to expect more of the final previews of, or in that case, you don't even have to call them previews once the spec is finalized.
Yeah.
But that's sort of at the point where you can expect to see releases that include these things. Anything before that, I mean, Sun wouldn't even want you to support something as an official product until the spec is final. This is just a simplification, an example that we did once a while back. I don't think it's actually worth looking at this stage because still there's some artifacts that were left over there that actually don't even exist anymore. So we'll go past that. Simplification on the EJB side, as I mentioned, you can define a session bean as a regular POJO class. And this applies to all of the EJB components. The interfaces themselves, we call them business interfaces. And the interesting thing here now that I think is a big improvement over the previous release is the fact that the session beans themselves implement the business interfaces. This is sort of the intuitive way that you would hope it worked. And in the past, you know, wasn't the way it did work. So you define a POJO class for your session bean. You implement the business interface. You define the business interface as just a regular business interface. It doesn't have to extend anything or extend EJB object. I don't know if they implement there, but it shouldn't extend EJB object or EJB local object. It just has to be regular interface. And so there's no homes at all anymore. They're allowed to be there, but they're not required. In the general case, we don't think people will use them. And we've defined annotations to say exactly which beans are EJBs or session beans. And the remote or local interfaces that go along with those are determined simply by looking at the bean itself, with the addition of a remote annotation to designate it as being local or remote. GSR 250 is the common annotation spec that includes a number of annotations that apply across both the platform, enterprise platform, as well as the standard edition platform. They're primarily at the EE level, though, and some of these in there are, you know, lifecycle annotations and things like this. GSR 181 is the web services metadata, and there's been some annotations defined in EJB 3.0 for web service endpoints as well. Another major thing here is dependency injection. I don't know if people are familiar with that, but sort of big in the industry and used by containers like Spring and other so-called inversion of control containers or IOC containers. Injection essentially means that you can take a field or a property, put an annotation on it, and the container will be responsible for injecting the resource into that field or property. And all of the basic types of resources are supported here. This is a real ease of use feature here that I think once people start using, they will see as invaluable, and they'll wonder how they got along without them.
Yeah.
This just makes code just go away. And so it's much, much simpler to develop.
You also need it to be able to use regular POJOs, right? Because otherwise you'll clutter your domain with all kinds of container-specific code.
Well, this is on, these injections are happening on session beans.
Yeah,
so
but if you don't have injection, you can have a POJO, but you still have a lot of code that is specific for your.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right,
so that
right.
It kind of goes together, being able to use POJOs and dependency injection is.
Right. Right, so you don't actually have to have any programmatic code in your session B now to do things like looking things up.
Exactly.
Yeah. The lifecycle methods are, we say enhanced, but I mean, I like to actually say that they're reduced because it's only the lifecycle methods that make sense really that are here now. So for a stateless session bean, there's only post-construct and pre-destroy. Those are the only two things that make sense for a stateless session bean, and so all of the other things have kind of gone away in the new simplified API. These are designated using annotations as well, or XML, and they kind of make it a lot easier to define what the lifecycle logic is. And you can simply annotate any method at all. You don't have to kind of specify any particular name or make use of a predefined method name used for that lifecycle method. You can also have these listener classes or what we call interceptor classes now. Interceptors essentially provide the AOP around advice equivalent in an EJB context. And you can define an interceptor method that will intercept all the business methods on that class, or you can do it on a per business method basis. And that just means that whenever a business method gets invoked, your own special interceptor method will get a chance to run before the business method gets invoked. And you can perform validation or anything that you want inside this interceptor method. And then depending upon what gets returned from that business method, you can decide to process or handle that result in other ways as well.
Does that also work the same as in Spring?
Yeah, so it's a similar thing to any interceptor mechanism. Just like, you know, Spring has a more generalized AOP framework.
Yeah.
This is a sort of specific interceptor mechanism which says I can intercept any of the business methods and add my own business logic around that call. So that means I can change things like, you know, the parameters passed into it. I can change the return result coming out of it. I can do validation on what's passed in or whatever I want. Or I can do some other logic in addition to what the business method already does. So as I say, it's quite powerful, and it also provides more flexibility for the implementer because they can rearrange the code in ways that make sense, much like the way you would organize something in AOP with separation of concerns.
Yeah.
So just an example of 2.1 here quickly. I think many of us already know this. We see all these this home interface. We see a cart remote interface. So this kind of requires the remote exceptions and so forth. Then the bean class has to have all the lifecycle methods on it, has to implement session bean, has to do all these this kind of extra template stuff, even though it's not using any of it. And the deployment descriptor, I mean, this is a small portion of the deployment descriptor, but in fact, there tends to be much, much more than this when you add the assembly descriptor and other bits onto it. So, you know, that was very heavy. It had interfaces that actually weren't helping, but were just getting in the way. Methods that didn't seem to do what they were named to do, and a lot of code clutter. The deployment descriptor, I think, is essentially gotten a bad name because it's been so hard to use and produce.
Don't you think that because of the annotations, you kind of lose, you know, the overview of what your application looks like?
Well, it's possible if you only use annotations to kind of not have this overall feeling of all of the session beans, perhaps, in your application. You know, if you haven't got the jar sitting in front of you, the EJB jar sitting there looking at these classes, you know, you might kind of think, well, you know, I don't have some global view of all of this. And so, I mean, you still can add the deployment descriptor now. It's not like it's disallowed. But
yeah, I know. But I mean, if it's kind of, you know, people don't like it because it's hard to use. But then because you had all kinds of tool support that you can, like in JDeveloper, you could double-click the deployment descriptor, and then you have like a stuff you can edit. And now with the annotations, I mean, everything is within your code. So you really, if you want to know what kind of column did I map to this attribute, you have to go to the code and see what your annotation is saying about that.
Okay, so we're still talking about Yeah, we're still talking about session beans right now. So the session beans, essentially, you can still go through and, you know, and annotate these. But as I say, I mean, the idea is that you can choose one or the other. If you kind of like the idea of having some global view and having all your metadata defined in one place, then, you know, people will go ahead and use the XML descriptors much like they have been doing in the past. But an alternative way, instead of kind of going the complete other way and saying, okay, I'm not going to use any deployment descriptors, I'm going to put it all in annotations, is you can put certain things in annotations and certain things in XML, and things in annotations that really do apply to the piece of code that you're annotating, you know, that are tightly coupled to that, you can put it as annotations, and then other things, you know, sort of declarative things, you can put in XML. So I think, you know, the flexibility here is the important thing, where people are A, allowed to use one or the other, or B, allowed to mix the two, if, you know, depending on where they want to draw the lines. So that's I think that, you know, there are people that like one and people that like the other, and then there are some people that like it, you know, some a bit of both.
Okay, but then I mean, because if you have like, if you make tools, you have to support it, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think that tools are going to be, the more that you go into the mixed case, or even if you go in just to annotations case, I think tools become more important to see that global view, because tools are going to be able to extract all that metadata from you, just like the way they would, just like the way they do now for deployment descriptors, where they'll extract the XML and give you some kind of cohesive view of all of these classes. You can have the same sort of thing with metadata. It just extracts it for you and gives you the same view.
Yeah.
So
but there's nothing like that right now, right?
No, that's still in the works, of course. I mean, people aren't going to release anything until the spec is final, but that's being worked on. You know, Eclipse and these other, and, you know, JDeveloper is sort of coming that way, though. We've come a long way towards doing that already. We have some preview support already out, and so they've already been doing some of that. As I say, Eclipse is a little bit behind there. They haven't caught nearly as much. They're just kind of getting together their old support for the old EJB spec, and then
with
the new persistence API. So, the web services project is just a little bit behind, I think, in some things right now.
Okay.
The web tools project. And
Was the least part of it, right? Of the WTP project.
Yeah. We're part of the, so the DALI is part of the WTP.
Yeah.
The Java Persistence API is part of that.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to show that same example in EJB3. You just have an at remote on the business interface. This is the one that used to have to extend EJB object. And there is no home interface or anything. It's just the bean class itself. So we define it as a stateful using annotation. And I think this is kind of a, you know, this is something where you are coupling the semantic meaning of this class with the class itself. This essentially is a stateful class, and it's kind of relying upon itself as being that. And in the logic, you know, there's this thing called complete order that says this is the last thing that happens in this class. Anything after this is an indication to remove this bean instance. So the at remove says whenever someone calls this, and the client contract says, okay, whenever I call that, then this bean will go away, and the container can release it. So this is a much simpler implementation for a stateful session bean than what we had to do in the previous 2.1 example. And it also, of course, as you noticed already, doesn't have any of the extra lifecycle stuff, because that's just optional. If you don't use it, then you don't have to define it.
So the at stateful and at remove, sorry.
Yep.
I was going to ask about what happens with the deployment descriptor, but that's your next slide.
The deployment descriptor, I mean, can be empty. As we mentioned, it can be, you can still go ahead and use it, but you know, essentially what you're saying is I'm redundantly specifying information, or in some cases I'm overriding information. So there may be some cases where you want to override, say, the security attributes of something because you're running a different environment. So you could use a deployment descriptor at that point to override security information and say, now run in this using these security rules. So that's the role of deployment descriptor there. So yeah, we've gone through all these things. Essentially, it does all that. We've gone through all those as we went. And we'll go on to some lifecycle methods are fine. I'm going to go on now so we can move on to persistence. Interceptors we talked about as well. So I'm going to skip ahead to the persistence part and get past the busy slides here. It's a lightweight POJO solution. That's the way the market has gone. That's the way Toplink has been always for the last 10 years, and that's the way other ORM solutions have gone as well. The last few years we've seen the open source Hibernate gain popularity as well. People like the POJO model, and you know, it turns out they like not having to pay for it as well. So that's one of the reasons. It's one of the reasons why, you know, the community edition is being offered as well. But so this is standardized now as part of the, it's called the Java Persistence API. This is just kind of saying kind of how this is merging in now. We've got the JDO vendors. We actually have the JDO vendors in, participating in the Eclipse project as well, and on the spec. So we have the old traditional EJB vendors here. We have the POJO vendors, and we have JDO vendors all part of the same expert group now and coming out with this Java Persistence API. So it's kind of the sort of future standard for persistence. And it runs both inside and outside the container. That was kind of one of the goals. We also had to make sure that it worked for some of the things that used traditionally in object-oriented models, which is inheritance and polymorphism. And ORM had to be standardized. We couldn't go forward with what we had in the past with the old entity beans, where everybody in every server had their own way of specifying ORM information. The queries, the query language has been retained, EJBQL, but beefed up to include more capability and flexibility.
What happened with the Hibernate flavor of this query language and Toplink's flavor?
Hibernate actually has a query language they call HQL, which is a lot like EJBQL anyway.
Yeah.
So that language is, I mean, they still have their own query language. I mean, just like we have our own, but the EJBQL is a standard one. So it's the one that the Java Persistence API will use. And is
okay,
using.
So as soon as you start using like the Hibernate specific one or the Toplink specific one, it won't be according to
portable.
The standard anymore.
It won't be portable, no.
Okay.
But I mean, you can define these things in ways so that you can access it in portable ways. You may define it in a non-portable language, but be able to execute it in a portable way as a named query. So they're called entities in the Java Persistence API, not entity beans. They're not beans anymore. They're just entities. They're not a server component in the sense of a managed component where you have all of the component facilities for security transactions, concurrency and such. They are lightweight POJOs that are managed simply by an entity manager. And you create them using new. You don't need some factory or anything like that to create them. You can just new it up and then start passing it into the entity manager and persisting them. You can have relationships to other entities. You don't require any callbacks or extra special interfaces to be involved. You can use them if you want, but it's completely up to you. And as I said, they work in the Java SE environment as well. So just an example of an entity here, a customer class that has a bunch of state defined within it. You can define the way that the persistence engine accesses that state by annotating either the fields or the properties of that class. We need an at entity to define this as an entity, and then we can say the table here, or we could leave that out to let it be defaulted. Or as was mentioned earlier, we can just wait and specify that in XML later on. But the ID, this is actually wrong. It doesn't have it should have a basic on there. It should not have a basic on there. That's actually looks like this is it. So this is the way it should look. This is the way that you would normally specify it, is you have an ID on there and you have an entity on there and you just default the table name, or as I say, you override it in XML. And all the rest of the state gets defaulted. It just becomes basic state.
What happens with the relationships? Because in Toplink you have something like a value holder interface, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a standard
right.
EJB3 concept, is it?
That's correct. There
so
is no.
So what happens if you want to do something like the value holder thing in EJB3?
So there's no way of doing a value holder in EJB3. It's all going to have to be done.
Because that's for lazy loading, right?
Yeah, so lazy loading is now going to have to happen through another mechanism. So it has to be done by the provider underneath the covers. And that means
your container, you mean?
Well, yeah, I call the persistence provider the one. The container may be, we differentiate between the container and the persistence provider because there's an actual pluggability contract where the container can plug into any persistence provider. And the persistence provider is the one that actually implements all the persistence interfaces. The container is the one who deploys the persistence provider and calls into it at any given time. So you kind of have this official contract which allows you to mix and match providers with different containers.
But
so
then you have to have a way of saying that you want that particular relationship to be lazy, right?
Coming back to that, we actually have some metadata which would say that this relationship should be loaded lazily if you can do that. And so I don't have an example of that, but for example, on a one-to-many here, that actually defaults to being lazily loaded, but you could also say to load it eagerly, and it's something called a fetch element on that annotation, which says fetch equals lazy or fetch equals eager.
Okay.
So you define it as part of the relationship, whether it should be lazily or eagerly fetched.
So that's more like the Hibernate way.
Well, Hibernate doesn't. In some ways, it's Hibernate. In other ways, it's kind of a mixture of the two, because although they don't have to define a different object in the domain, which I think some people actually like, it can only be a hint now. We can't guarantee that something's going to be lazily fetched.
Okay.
You can say lazy, but the provider may go ahead and load it anyway. Just because it's the only way that you can standardize this.
Yeah.
Based on implementations. So that's the way we've ended up. You can map them to different table in hierarchies, so that if you want to use a single table and throw all your classes within a table, then you can use your entire inheritance hierarchy in that table and just put a discriminator column on it to differentiate between the classes. You can also do a joined strategy where you're normalizing your data across a shared table, and then the subclasses and the added state that they have get stored in separate tables, and you join across those tables to obtain the state for any given entity. And there's this third one, which is an optional one, where you can have a table per concrete class, and it's the denormalized data model where you repeat all the shared data in every one of the tables for the concrete subclasses. So this is just kind of an overview of how you could map inheritance. And I mean, there's other things, there's life cycle methods. There's an entity API that provides you with, let's get past that, an entity manager API, which offers the transactions, the querying. Client can actually have these things injected. And this at resource here shows the injection of an entity manager. The actual standard way of doing this would be at persistence context. A lot of people think of these as resources. So in our server, we've actually supported it for at resource, which is a generic Java EE annotation for injecting any resource. So this is kind of actually making use of an Oracle feature here where you can just resource an entity manager as well. Queries, I think we talked a little bit about these, but essentially the big thing here is that we've added both dynamic and static queries and named them. So you can define a query. Now this is a dynamic query where I'm creating a EJBQL string and returning it. But I could also define the same query, much like I would have done in EJB2, in a descriptor or in annotation metadata, and then just gave it a name. And then at runtime, I could say, give me one of those type of queries by this name, and then execute it. and that would be called a named query or a static query. So in this example here, we see the same query, but it's defined as a named query annotation, and I could access that anywhere in the code by saying create named query, and then give the query name. And here I've got a query named find employee by name. And I can even bind parameters in then at execution time so that I can I can have parameterized queries. And here we see
Do you have the same tool support for creating queries like this as you have in your TopLink workbench?
So the question is, are we going to have this supported in TopLink workbench, or
no, you already have that, right? If you have like a mapping, then you can kind of click together your queries. Workbench helps you by with the syntax. But if you're gonna do it like this with annotations in your EGB3 classes, will you have the same support?
Right. So there's no defined interface or GUI or tools in the specification for the persistence API. It's just an API for code. Any tools would have to offer additional help, much like our mapping workbench does, and for TopLink. So we would be doing a similar thing with the TopLink release to offer the same kinds of assistance that we've offered in the past with our regular TopLink queries. But the spec won't require that.
No, I understand that. But if in JDeveloper, if I create a EGB3 project, then I don't have any of the visual tools that I have when I start a TopLink specific model project.
Right. I think that's only because they haven't quite gotten to the stage where the mapping workbench is supporting EJB3 yet.
Okay, but that's something that you're gonna that's planned.
Certainly you do want the same level of tooling.
So,
for sure, we want to do that. We're also, as I say, we're doing some of this within the Eclipse framework, too.
Yeah.
But JDeveloper certainly will support this stuff at some point as well.
Okay.
So the essential stuff, as I mentioned, it's the reference implementation, and it sort of shares the core ORM functionality with the regular TopLink, and people can go to the GlassFish project site and see it there. And the idea that we have is that we want to make sure that anybody that uses GlassFish version or the TopLink Essentials community version can migrate very, very easily up to the regular TopLink product. So it's so that they can get the O2X and the EIS support and all the other things that TopLink Enterprise version will offer. So that should be pretty easy to do. This is essentially just sort of giving a checklist of things that we support now. But we actually added some 1.4 support in our 10.1.3 preview, where you didn't even need Java 5. If you wanted to use XML, you could just use that instead of having to do JDK 5. So there's some things about some of the other competitors out there. It basically, JBoss is the other one that provides it. BEA are committed to EJB3, but they're still not haven't done very much in terms of implementation. So they're just trying to kind of put their stuff inside of EJB3 now for using SolarMetric stuff, but their container still was not done. And IBM has not said anything, so we're still waiting to see something from them.
Me and a coworker did a Google search this morning about IBM and EGB3, and there's nothing.
Almost nothing, no. And it's interesting. I think that they will eventually come around. I know that they are getting much more interested in it now, and they've been a little bit more active on the expert group. But
they have to, right?
It's just a question of them coming late to the game again. They kind of just took too long. So they'll come late for sure. I mean, there'll probably be another year or so before they have anything to offer at all. But eventually they'll have something for sure.
So what about the tools side? Support on the tools side?
Well, you can kind of think of IBM and Eclipse. you mean from IBM tools, or?
Well, I guess in general, are there any other vendors?
Yeah.
I mean, because JDeveloper is being ramped up to do this, right?
Yeah, JDeveloper is one of the, I think JDeveloper is right now the only tool out there that does EJB3 stuff.
Okay.
Right now we have the Eclipse stuff going on. We've got that project ongoing, but you know, it's not even as far as EJB3.
Did you think the Hibernate tool for Eclipse does something? Or is it just Hibernate?
No. Yeah, that's Hibernate. They haven't really, they don't really have any good tooling for Hibernate even.
Well,
they just got
I agree. Some people think there are. I mean, you can still like generate stuff with the Hibernate.
It's very sketchy.
It is.
I mean, traditionally, I mean, there's a reason for that. It's because Hibernate folks, Gavin and those guys, have never really wanted to do tools. They always kind of thought tools were for weenies.
Yeah.
So they kind of proudly said, you know, we don't need tools for this stuff. You shouldn't need tools. Well, it's only later on when they realize that actually everybody does want tools, and there's a lot of people that need tools to use this, that they say, oh, okay, we better put something in. But they haven't really got something very consistent. So they're trying, though, I guess.
Do you get a sense that, I mean, how committed is the JDeveloper team? Are they really trying to make this happen, or are they sort of still focusing mainly on Fusion stuff, so you know, 80, because you know this is not part of the Fusion initiative,
right? So that's a good question. I actually did have the JDeveloper guys contacting me regularly when they were doing this stuff. They were trying really hard. There was a few of them working on it and working very hard on getting this EJB3 preview done when they did it. I'm not sure what the next phase for them is. Probably. You know, they're gonna want the final stuff now, so they'll be getting the next final draft of the spec and then updating to that. But my sense is that they really do. They're committed to this. They like it. They see how much easier it is. You know, they want to support it. And so there's some excitement from some of the people working on JDeveloper there. So they say the few guys that were doing it were really, really happy about it.
Yeah, I guess the question is, to what extent is JDeveloper focusing on Fusion versus being, you know, focusing on being sold as an external product? Because in as far as it's sold as an external product, EJB3 is huge. In as far as it's just focusing on Fusion, I mean, this is really not part of the picture. Or do you think that they're going to, you know, contemplate EJB3 as a standard internally in Fusion?
No, I think absolutely. You know, even internally, as a Fusion product, people are going to be using the EJB3 model, the programming model. It's definitely going to be ubiquitous, I think, both internally and externally. It's just a matter of it kind of working its way through the different layers.
People plant ADFBC, do you think?
I can't say that. I mean, these are sort of more strategic things that you know, I probably couldn't answer, but you know, obviously there is a lot of usability in EJB3 that I think the market will kind of pick up on and use and like. I have to say that, you know, I'm kind of biased here because I've had my head inside EJB3 for quite a long time, and so I kind of see it as being a very good thing. I've seen other things where, you know, ADF is trying to kind of use some of the things. Some of the ideas and concepts from EJB3, but you know, it's really kind of a different layer, in a sense. It's only at the kind of BC4J level that there's the overlap. ADF binding itself, you know, could still work
right.
With EJB3.
Yeah, that's on top.
It sits on top.
You're talking about the ADF-BC area.
Yeah, it's just the BC area that really overlaps, and I do see that BC will go, you know, kind of. I think take less of the spotlight at that point. It'll officially we're going forward with EJB3 rather than BC4J for sure.
What?
I mean, because that's an exact about face to what we've been hearing.
Yes.
Oh, who have you been hearing that from?
Well, of course the ADFBC people, right?
Oh well, there you go.
Well, this is allegedly the Fusion. You know, the Fusion call. So, this is huge.
Well, no, I mean, the fact is that
the confusion is also because last time we spoke to somebody, and right now everything is in the Oracle apps is they're using business components, right, and not TopLink or something like that.
Right.
So they told us they're not going to change it with the next generation of Fusion
right.
applications. Because
yeah,
it's not going to be possible to change everything.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where they're sitting right now. So
yeah.
I guess the idea is internally, people right now are sitting on BC4J. That's where they are right now.
Yeah.
But when it comes to new projects and things, I think that people have already been using EJB3 and are expressing
yeah.
interest in using it more.
Yeah, that makes sense because it's a standard, right?
So I guess when you're talking, I guess maybe there's two different views. There's the sort of short to medium term, and then there's the long term. I mean, EJB3 is
all dead, right?
So. essentially, when you talk about standards, EJB3 is a standard, right? So when EJB3 offers the kind of support that it does as a standard, I don't think you can kind of sort of say that. BC4J is going to supplant EJB3. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But the question just is, how much is EJB3, and how fast will it become used inside of Fusion and such?
Yeah. There's still things that ADFBC does that EJB3 doesn't. Right? I mean, it carries more weight with maturity with trying to support, like say, complex logic within the middle tier and all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and all of that architecture,
yeah.
Having the separation between the entity objects and the view objects. I mean, there's the whole architecture there of, the caching and all that stuff that is, pretty nifty.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I just wanted to say that we're not talking about ADF going away or anything like that, right? This is not that. What we're talking about is the persistence part inside of EJB3. Sometimes they're kind of used synonymously, and I guess that leads to some confusion as well. That ADF is a framework that does an awful lot of stuff. It's very possible that in the future, it could be done using EJB3 instead of BC4J, for example, or any persistence technology for that matter. And the key is that framework is still supported and still able to do the things that it's doing now.
Well, yeah, but ADF, the business component aspect of ADF is a pretty big hunk of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But, that's just a model. It doesn't, you could pull that out and provide a flexible API or using some of the similar interfaces and use a different technology underneath, in some ways.
Of course. It's decouplable, but.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you had a big old system written using that architecture, taking advantage and throwing all sorts of your business logic into that structure, the refactoring would certainly not be trivial.
Well, I guess it depends on what you end up with an interface, and because I would expect that the customer-facing interfaces would not necessarily change.
No, right, but all that code stuffed down into the ADFBC action classes and stuff, and
yeah,
would all go away.
Yeah, you could get rid of a lot of it. That's for sure. So I guess in terms of standards, this is all I can say. This is the direction that we're going for standardization of persistence. ADF has been doing some things with TopLink as well, and I know Doug Clark, who was supposed to be giving this presentation, would have been able to fill you in more on that. He's been working more with the ADF folks. And would be able to, I guess, give you, probably answer the questions that you had more.
Well, the first demo that was released is also an ADF demo with TopLink and EJB3 session beans. So you have data bindings in JSF, and then underneath you have the session beans and the TopLink stuff.
Exactly.
And
that
was
yeah.
really nice, I think.
Well, it's no question. ADFBC has, to some extent, failed to get any traction outside of a internally within Oracle and a very small community outside of it. So from a marketing perspective, EJB3 is certainly, the one to want to bet your horse on.
Yeah, yeah.
but really the question is, there's that 5,000 developer gorilla sitting back there. And the question is, what chair is that gorilla going to sit on? Is gorilla going to sit on the ADFBC chair, or is that gorilla going to move over and sit on an EJB3 chair?
Yeah, so it, it, it's already sitting on one chair, and I guess the only thing I was trying to bring up was the fact that it doesn't necessarily have to stay on that chair for its whole life.
Well, I'm sure that's your hope. The question is, does the fusion architect, is that what the fusion architect is saying? I mean, if this mythical individual even exists.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's a little bit of both there. I think there is a kind of a distributed architect that sits in a number of different people's minds, and I'm sure that there's different philosophies that go on there, and probably different ideas for what might happen in the future. But I think right now, I mean, it's stable where it is. I don't see that there, nobody right now is picking it up and taking it off of BC4J or anything like that, right? They've got what they've got, and they're kind of moving forward right there, right now. And I don't see it happening right now, as I say, because EJB3 is not even final yet. It won't be until EJB3 suddenly becomes final and starts gaining huge amounts of traction that I think they would even consider anything like that.
Okay, so the gorilla is quite comfortable right now, but you're hoping that the gorilla will start to feel uncomfortable, soon.
Well,
but there's no reason why you have to choose, right? If you have something that works, it works, and you don't want to change it. But if you start something new or you want to add something, there's no reason why. Because the business components, if you deploy them as a session bin, even though the program doesn't notice it, it's still running in a container. So there's no reason why you couldn't, use both EGB3 and with the top link and also in some other areas use the business components.
Well, yeah, except that, let's not try to have too many hammers in our toolbox that are just different colors.
Well, but you also don't want to have a golden hammer that's supposed to,
Yeah, I think
do everything, but it still doesn't. I mean.
Yeah, I think in the beginning, we sort of are going to end up with the kind of the beaten up but kind of reliable hammer that people have been used to using, and then they sort of find this sort of new high tech hammer that works really cool and that everyone else is buying now, and that I'm only ever going to be able to find pieces to fix in the future for, and that sort of thing. But for the while, I think there may very well be sort of two hammers in the box. Over time, you might find that you use the new shiny one a lot more than the older one, but that won't be for a little while.
Put the two hammers in the same room and see who hammers on whom.
That's
because I strongly suspect that if you had anybody from the ADFBC team on this call, there might be some sparks flying right now.
Well, I mean, there's no question that there is a little bit of, I'm not in that side. So I'm not in product management. I'm on the spec group, so I don't sort of see outside of my own sort of limited view. But I can imagine that there are some differences there. So, I'm just not involved in it. And I've heard that, it doesn't surprise me from what you say that there are people on the BC4J side that are, I can't imagine that they would say that, EGB3 is going to go away.
I would not assert that anybody has ever even hinted that it's going away. I mean, really, the question, and given that this is the Fusion Regional Director meeting, the question is, is this going to be strategic for Fusion? And if it's strategic for Fusion, when? And that's really the question that I think is still in my mind.
Well, also, is the direction for Fusion kind of the two-pronged approach that we've been getting in the past, which is there's a set of products that are targeted towards Java community and standards-based stuff like this EJB3, and there's a set of products that are aimed at the Oracle traditional developers, and ADF Business Components is kind of in that frame right now.
Yeah.
I kind of thought that Fusion was about the whole Fusion project that was working on the app stack.
No, it's more than that, though. I think it's covering the tools. We're going to get that cleared up. I hope at a future meeting. One of these days.
One of these days we'll actually get the definition of what Fusion is.
Yeah, but until then, we're still seeing this two-pronged thing, and it may be that continues.
Yeah, far be it for me to define what fusion is, but
actually, if you saw it, even in I was just laughing as this call started. I picked up my my brand new copy of Computer World, and the cover article is Oracle still faces questions from PeopleSoft users. Some say it hasn't provided a clear roadmap for apps.
Well, I guess there's still some strategists out there that have to do some more work.
I don't know. I guess, I mean, given that it's been another week and I have to, sing my same song, I will sing the same song. I mean, we're allegedly the regional fusion directors, and I do not have a clear idea of what fusion means.
Well, it's fusion middleware, right? I mean, every presentation that I attend is they're saying there's fusion, and fusion middleware is being used for fusion, but it's also meant for projects that are, like custom-made applications and stuff like that. So it's not just a fusion platform; it's a Java platform for other applications as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably consistent with the message that's trying to be gotten out there is that fusion does represent this entire middleware layer, and that it may be this aggregate of a few different technologies that offer choice. But that it really is kind of a strategy going forward of this is a layer that you can use Oracle for in the middle tier, and the more flexibility the better, as far as I'm concerned, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, but like I said, maybe somebody will actually get that addressed.
Yeah. Maybe one day you'll get a definition of what fusion is. If you do, send it to me too.
Any week now, I'm sure it'll.
It'll probably strengthen up a little bit as the the platform gets more and more out there. I guess people will find themselves. I guess
one can only hope.
Yeah. Well, are there any other questions about the EJB3 side of it though at this stage? Or?
I have a question about TopLink. If you have a project and you want to start out, is there a compelling reason to use TopLink instead of the open source or other implementation of EJB 3.0 persistence?
It depends on your project. If you really see your project as being a large, scalable, clusterable kind of application, then it shouldn't matter in theory that you start with one or the other. You should, as I say, we focused on migration because it essentially just means that you might have to change some import statements, the package names. That's really the kind of big difference on the core technology. There's just different package names.
But it's more an issue of what provider you choose, right? Whether it's clusterable or not. It shouldn't make a difference in your code, right?
It wouldn't make a difference in your code. There's just more tie-ins. There's more features available in the full TopLink. And if you're going to be going that way anyway, then you may as well just start out that and then not have to even change any package names.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Oracle features, that are specific to Oracle database that TopLink adds on to the regular core TopLink that, sits there for every database. We've done some.
Do you have a list or something that?
Off the top of my head, I can think of a few things. There's Oracle hints that we support in our queries. We support hierarchical queries. The flashback. Stuff. We support the VPD, virtual private database thing. So there's a lot of these things. obviously, the regular Oracle-specific syntax, obviously, things like that.
Yeah. But for example, the VPD, if I don't use the TopLink provider, does that mean I cannot use a virtual private database?
It means that you'd have to have support for it specifically from whichever provider that was offered to you. It's not in any specification, and it requires a hook.
Okay.
So if they don't offer that hook, then you wouldn't be able to do it. If they'd offer it, then you would, yeah.
Okay.
It's a hook at the connection level. And there's also some caching implications that you have to have support for that we had to add in.
That's true, yeah.
You can't get cached data if you're going through VPD, right? You have to be totally, otherwise, you're getting data from a shared data. And so things like Hibernate, where they got shared JDBC data, they'd have to be able to say, to turn that off, I guess.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So yeah, these are just, there's a bunch of features that, so if you're sort of counting on any of those or thinking about exploiting any of those right at the front end of the project, then you probably just want to start with regular Toplink to begin with.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to go? Yeah. So the EJB3 is on the cutting edge right now in the essentials, though, right? So in the reference implementation, you know, the Toplink code stream is a little bit behind the essentials code stream. So you're better off starting with these essentials, the community edition, and then moving up to regular Toplink.
Okay.
When it's caught up.
Yeah. Or just use the old version of Toplink, right? The one that's
using
that's
proprietary
been
APIs.
For.
Yeah, if you use proprietary Toplink APIs, then you're okay.
Is it going to be hard to move from that to EJB3? Is there going to be any migration for that?
There is going to be some migration. Yeah. It's a matter of just getting the APIs themselves to change. And so, I mean, I'm not sure if we're going to end up doing kind of a code replacement type of tool. But there are other strategies where it will be a lot easier, such as with queries and such, where we'll just allow them to be executed within the same queries defined in Toplink to be executed within EJB3 Entity Manager and such. So
okay.
There's lots of things that will be easier, and there's other ones that might take a little bit more effort. And we're just deciding where the tooling is going to go right now and what to spend our time on.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, are there any other questions?
Nope.
If not, then I guess we'll close that off. I thank you guys for coming, and you can send me an email if you have any questions in the future. My email is michael.keith@oracle.com.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, you guys. Also, I'll send a note with a link to the presentation slides. Mike, if you could just send those to me, and I post them on a inside page that only the regional directors access.
Okay. That'd be good. Okay.
Great.
All right, and going back one really quickly to address Paul's question about sort of this Fusion middleware overview.
Yep.
I know last time we met, we talked about that we would have like an open Q&A session.
Right.
And if you could send me like the 2 to 3 questions or topic areas that are really important to you that you want to make sure you cover, because that's the best way for me to make sure I get the best people on the line for the Q&A.
Okay. Will you start a topic on the forum or something?
Yeah, that would be great. You can put it on the forum. That would be great.
Because otherwise we'll all send the same questions to you, right? So we better post them
exactly.
on the forum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks everyone.